Aloha from Hawaii. I'm Gary Hickling. My program tonight is called Lotte Lehmann, Legendary and Unknown. Many thanks to Jeffrey Riggs, Joe Pierce, and Seth Winner for making this possible. Here's my background on the great singer. I met Lehmann in 1962 when I was 20 and she was 74. We stayed in good touch. She was a famous correspondent until her death in 1976. I wasn't a singer or her student in any way, but only drove a friend to his lessons, which I, of course, listened to. She was the first genius that I'd met, and she broke the prejudice that I, an instrumentalist, had against singers. But a lot more. She opened the world of opera and art song to me. When I produced programs for WBAI, Lehmann consented to phone interviews for an 85th birthday tribute and for a Melchior memorial. For Beaumont Glass's Centennial Lehmann Biography in 1988, I compiled the discography. Later, I began the Lotte Lehmann Foundation. When the board scaled back its functions and the foundation became inactive, I began the Lotte Lehmann League website. I've produced two Lehmann CDs, one a tribute to her by students and colleagues on the Arabesque label, and a second one on the Music and Arts label that features Lehmann in rarely encountered arias and songs, on four CDs with translations and notes on a fifth. So as you can tell, I've been fascinated by Lehmann, the singer, and the personality most of my life. In her time, she really was a celebrity, and so that's why I call tonight's presentation on Lotte Lehmann, Legendary and Unknown. The second half of that title will become clearer as we proceed, but let's get to music. As an opera singer, she was certainly most famous for her Marschallin. She began singing the role in 1924 and in 1927 recorded the following excerpt. Notice that though the singing is adequate, it doesn't have the personality or characterization that we expect of Lehmann's Marschallin. From that 1927 Rosenkavalier excerpt, we move to Lehmann's famous 1933 recording that included the dream cast of Elisabeth Schumann and Richard Meier. We'll hear the scene in which she's dismissed the boorish Baron Ox and the Marshal and laments the passing of time. Listen for Lehmann's greatly increased identification with the Marshalin, her predicament, as well as some of the other vocal nuances that just weren't apparent 6 years earlier.
Und einen Winkel Geld dazu. Wird nicht so sein. Und bildet sich noch ein, dass er es ist, der sich was
Schon so verbringt.
We can tell from that famous moment in the 1933 recording of Der Rosenkavalier why Lehmann was so respected in this role. The Marschallin was only one of her favorite roles, as she told me in the 1973 phone interview.
I know your favorite opera role, and we will be playing some of Der Rosenkavalier on the program.
But I wouldn't say that it was my favorite role.
It isn't?
No, it was one of my favorite roles. You know, I sang with the greatest of delight and devotion, Fidelio,
mm-hmm.
which I have never sung in America.
Yes.
I sang it in Vienna and all over Europe, and with Toscanini and Bruno Walter and all these great conductors, and Richard Strauss. And also, I love very much Elisabeth and Tannhäuser.
Mm-hmm.
So one cannot say that this Marschallin. Marschallin is just a role which here in the United States was the most important of the roles which I have sung.
Of Lehmann's favorite roles, Elisabeth, in that emotionally involved 1930 recording of Dich teure Halle from Tannhäuser. Now I'd like you to hear a portion of the recording that has been on most of the best recordings of the 20th century lists for years. Of course, the 1935 Die Walküre with Bruno Walter conducting. In the phone interview for Melchior's Memorial, I asked Lehmann about that classic recording.
You want to know about the Walküre recording?
Yes. Did you have good rehearsals for that?
We have sung it so often, and I don't remember that we had any rehearsals.
My golly.
We had the rehearsal for the recording itself,
mm-hmm.
but not especially musical rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
From that 1935 recording, listen for Lotte Lehmann's fabled ability to tell a story, to be the story. She just happened to be the one singing it.
Der Männer Sippe saß hier im Saal, von Hunding zur Hochzeit geladen. Freut ein Weib, das ungefragt Schächer ihm schenkte zur Frau. Traurig saß ich, während sie tranken, ein Fremder trat da. Immer Augen eines, doch des andern Strahl Angst schuf es allen, traf die Männer sein mächtiges Treu. Hier
mit heiligem Braun als ein Licht.
1935 Die Walküre demonstrates both the histrionic and vocal range that Lehmann possessed. Certainly part of the legendary Lehmann. And that brings me to the first misconception, that Lotte Lehmann couldn't sing high notes. It was true that as she aged, she lost her top range. But let's go back a bit to an unknown area of Lehmann's art, Puccini roles. She sang a lot of Puccini. Mimi, Butterfly, Tosca, Manon Lescaut, Giorgetta in Il Tabarro, and was the first to sing Suor Angelica in Vienna.
Oh,
That 1920 acoustic recording of Sensamum, or One Muta, demonstrates Lehmann's bel canto quality and a sweet, soft, high A at the end. I hardly need remind you that this was well before supertitles, since old Lehmann sang and recorded almost everything in the language of the audience. Puccini himself recommended her Sua Angelica, but there is another Puccini role that Lehmann premiered in Vienna that may surprise you. First version of Del Primo Pianto, Die Ersten Tränen, in that 1927 Turandot excerpt in which Lehmann's high C doesn't sound particularly difficult. But even in her own relative youth, her high notes seemed suspicious. This is what a Berlin critic wrote about her Turandot. I confess I anticipated Lehmann's high notes with some trepidation. A more pleasant surprise is scarcely imaginable. This unbelievably difficult role, difficult because one has to sing almost constantly in the highest register, was as good as totally conquered by the artist. Unforced, free, clear, warm, her voice purled forth. So brava, bravissima. But wait, as they say on TV, there's more. You'll have all your preconceptions about Lotte Lehmann high notes destroyed once you hear the beautiful high D flat at the end of Butterfly's entrance.
Thank you.
Riemann sang Ancora un passor via as Bald sind wir auf der Höhe in that 1925 acoustic, and she was confident enough to hold out that Osia D flat. I'm in the misconceptions portion of this Lehmann demonstration, and I'll stay with the high-range subject just enough to let you hear the reason that history and most vocal experts believe that she couldn't sing the high notes. That takes us to a 1936 Salzburg Festival Fidelio conducted by Toscanini. Lehmann wasn't confident that she could sing the high note, a B natural, at the end of the Komm Hoffnung aria, so Toscanini transposed the aria down a half step. This was uncharacteristic of Maestro, but he had called Lehmann the greatest artist in the world, so he made an exception. But as you'll hear after the high B flat, at the end, Lehmann sings the Ad Libitum with a second fermata on the A-flat. A scandal and a surprise in one aria. This was only available on shortwave and the sound is excruciating, so I'll only play the transposed ending. Okay, that was hard on the ears. So let's hear Lehmann in the studio recording of Komm Hoffnung, recorded in 1927, the Beethoven centennial year, when, I guess it was Franz Schalk, convinced Lehmann that she, though a lyric soprano, would be able to sing Fidelio. Listen for the loving warmth she brings to O du, referring to the husband she hopes to free. And one hears love in the voice when she sings Liebe, and how sweetly she is able to color the süßen Trost, sweet comfort. Her determination and courage can be heard in the way Lehmann enunciates with great precision, Ich folg dem inneren Triebe, ich wanke nicht. I follow the inner drive, I do not waver.
Oh,
With that high B at the end. And did you notice the centered sound of the low C early on? She sang a lot of Fidelios, 35 in Vienna, and also in Salzburg, Hamburg, Berlin, Paris, Stockholm, Antwerp, and London, for a grand total of 82. Not bad for a supposedly lyric soprano. No, I'm forgetting. Am I working on the legendary portion of this presentation or the misconceptions? The second misconception is that she was primarily a singer of Strauss and Wagner. In fact, she sang many more Massenet Manons in Vienna than any other role. Recorded that version of Nütze die schönen jungen Tage, Profitons bien de la jeunesse, in 1924, and recorded it again later with a microphone. But now something that even the most dedicated Lehmann fans don't know, she was a successful Desdemona, singing it 22 times. After her 1926 Covent Garden performance, Hermann Klein wrote, "Lotte Lehmann was a perfect Desdemona, in fact, the best I can recall. Albani, Ames, Melba, I have heard them repeatedly in that role, but I place Lehmann first."
Jesus,
Song with George Sell conducting Lehmann in 1924. Most vocal enthusiasts know the duet from Die Todesstadt with Lehmann and Taube, one of the most successful recordings of all time, but there's another Korngold aria that I want you to hear. It's from Das Wunder der Heliane. Here's how Lehmann sets the scene. The confession and defense of the lovely queen who is accused of immorality because she tried to give beauty to the youth who, innocently, was condemned to death. The aria is sensually sung with what I can call vocal opulence, and she doesn't just sing it. No, she becomes that moment in the opera. 1928 recording of Ich ging zu ihm from Korngold's Das Wunder der Heliane. Lotte Lehmann could be convincing. Many writers and critics falsely assume that Lehmann's Lieder career only began when, after 1937, she moved to the States. But this 1921 recording of Cecilia by Strauss demonstrates Lehmann's complete identification with the lead. Swept along with Lehmann's enthusiasm, And here's another example of a successful early Leet recording. And since it's 1932 and with a microphone, we have a chance to hear the fabled Lehmann diction. Seems excited by the feelings evoked by Beethoven's Freudvoll und Leidvoll. The final canardial address is Lehmann's purported shortness of breath, and along with the high notes, advancing years did take a toll. But here she is at the age of 59 in Schubert's Nacht und Träume.
Oh, Thank you.